Chapter 60. Numa Vessel Griffin. Kurt was alone at the helm, lit up by the glow of computer controls as he piloted the craft westward through the night. A makeshift panel covered the shattered window, and the remaining armor had been slid back into position. It was past midnight when the radar display indicated another helicopter coming in. This time it was expected. Kurt picked up the microphone, dialed up the Numa frequency, and spoke. "That you, Rudy? Or should I call Paul and Gamay to battle stations?" "I'd rather not get shot down tonight," Rudy said. "Permission to come aboard?"
"Permission granted," Kurt said.
"Let me find a spot to park."
"No need," Rudy said. "I'm still young enough to slide down a cable."
Kurt turned the exterior lights on and set the Griffin's automatic controls to match the helicopter's course. That done, he pressed the intercom. "The boss has arrived. Better get topside and keep him from going overboard." Paul and Gamay heard the call and went to the aft deck to help with Rudy's arrival. The helicopter was approaching from directly astern, a pair of floodlights on its lower side illuminating the water. It closed the gap slowly and matched the Griffin's speed once it was overhead. A side door came open, and Rudy could be seen in the doorway wearing a life preserver and a suit of all-weather gear. With the two craft traveling in unison, Rudy descended on a cable. The wind and the downwash from the helicopter pushed him backward as he dropped, but the pilot compensated nicely. As he came into range, Paul reached up, grabbed his feet, and helped him to the deck. Rudy unhooked himself and waved to the pilot, who flashed the lights, pulled up, and flew off to the north.
"Welcome to the party," Paul said.
"Looks like I've missed it," Rudy replied, noting the burn marks, dented armor, and missing equipment.
"Be glad about that," Gamay said.
"Let's go inside," Rudy said. "I was just on the line with Hiram. He and Max have something to tell us." Back inside the Griffin, Rudy took off the life jacket and the rain gear and found a seat. The ride on the hydrofoils was incredibly smooth. You'd never know we were cruising at 50 knots. Kurt turned. "She runs like a thoroughbred," he said, "even after all we put her through." With the four of them crowded into the wheelhouse, Kurt switched the communication system on and accepted an incoming transmission from Washington, D.C. As soon as the link was established, Hiram Yeager's face appeared on the screen.
"I see you survived your journey," Hiram said.
"Are you talking to Rudy or to us?" Gamay asked.
"All of you."
"We're just getting started," Kurt said. "What's the word?"
"Our search has been successful," Yeager announced. "Too successful, I'm afraid."
"Didn't think that was possible," Rudy said. "What gives?"
"We've found a possible submarine on one of the old surveys," Hiram explained. "Then we found another. And later we found yet another. We've now located 6 possible sonar contacts that might be the Minerve."
6, Kurt said sarcastically. "Is that all?"
"Still, better than none," Hiram said.
"You're right about that," Rudy replied. "Send the data through. We'll take a look."
"Sending it now," Yeager said.
The information streamed in from Washington, and a map of the central Mediterranean appeared on the screen. The boot of Italy occupied the middle, with Libya and Tunisia at the bottom, the Greek peninsula on the far right, and Corsica and Sardinia and the southern coast of France in the upper left. One by one, blinking dots popped up on the map. The first was just 80 miles south of Toulon. The second appeared in shallow waters near Sardinia. The next 2 dots appeared in deep water between Italy and Greece. A 5th just off the coast of Libya. A 6th near Malta. The sonar pictures came in next. Kurt, Paul, Gamay, and Rudy took their turns and examined the raw images.
"The older images are awfully blurry," Rudy noted.
"Systems have progressed since you were a lad," Kurt said.
"Very funny," Rudy said. "I'm not much older than you."
By the time all the data had come in, talk turned to narrowing down the list.
"I've ordered additional teams to be set up," Rudy explained, "but it'll be a couple of days before anyone else is ready, so we'll get first crack at this. Which door do you want to look behind?"
"We can rule out the wreck near Toulon," Kurt said. On screen, Yeager disagreed.
"Max has that listed as the highest physical match to the Minerve's profile."
"It's definitely a submarine," Kurt said, "but there's no chance the French could have missed that." Yeager didn't argue. What about the deepwater wrecks? Paul suggested. They're relatively close to our current position, and checking them first would speed up the timetable.
You're not taking into account the descent and surfacing time, Kurt said. Besides, I don't think either of those are the Minerve.
What makes you say that?
Because they're on a direct line toward Israel, Kurt said. Would you take the straightest route to your destination if you knew you were being hunted?
The Dakar did, Paul pointed out. Another reason to rule those locations out, Kurt said. We know the intention was to take different routes home. The course lines leading to the deepwater locations are too similar to the Dakar's.
Rudy spoke up. Rule them out for now. Same with Malta. That leaves the Sardinia wreck and the target off the coast of Libya.
Kurt stared at the map, running courses and headings through each of the possible locations, making calculations of the time, distance, and danger.
It comes back to the damaged snorkel, Kurt said. Assuming the Minerve's temporary commander did what Rudy suggested, sitting still and submerged during the day and traveling on the surface at night, he would still have to worry about French radar. How does he do that?
Two options I can think of, Rudy suggested. Travel where French radar won't find you, in the territorial waters of other nations, or line yourself up in the shipping lanes and appear, on radar at least, like just another vessel.
Gamay spoke next. The shipping lanes get crowded around Sicily with all the traffic rounding Isola della Corrente at the southern tip. A missing submarine might easily be spotted even at night, a chance our friend can't take.
A good point. With the French telling the world they'd lost a submarine, the Minerve would have to stay out of sight.
That leaves one option, Kurt said. Get as far away from France as quickly as possible, and then turn east and hug the African coast.
The French were primarily searching with aircraft, Paul noted, and every mile away from France means longer transit times out and back and less time on station.
Kurt nodded. Going south also puts a larger gap between the Minerve and the Dakar, making it less likely that the French would find both.
And if the French are steadily shifting their search grid to the east to account for the known speed of the submarines, they would soon be searching an area out in front of the Minerve while it crept along behind, Rudy said. That might explain why they never found it.
All eyes focused on the target off the Libyan coast. It lay 70 miles offshore in shallow waters of the Gulf of Sidra.
That sonar image is one of the oldest, Hiram said. It's not very clear.
All the same, that's our target, Kurt said. At top speed, we can be there by morning.